This episode of the Flush Podcast is brought to you by Federal Premium Ammunition and by Onyx Hunt, the number one GPS hunting map app. Onyx, know where you stand. Today, we've taken our bird hunting adventures all the way to the tropical rainforests and sandy beaches on the islands of Hawaii. Dean Snelling is a local on the island. He's sitting next to me. He's an upland bird hunter, and he's about to share his views from a place few bird hunters have ever thought about following, a bird dog. After this conversation, Hawaii may just find its way to the top of your bird hunting bucket list. Aloha, and welcome to another episode of the Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank. I'm your host. Brandon Morton is our producer. We are sitting on the beach in Hawaii. On my left, I can see the waves crashing. It's beautiful. I can see a volcano on my right, the tropical rainforest. Brandon, did you ever think podcasts would take us this far?
This is my first out of state on location recording of any podcast. I didn't think the Flush would take me there, but I'm super happy to be here. It's beautiful outside.
So we've been here for 2 days on the island so far. What's your favorite thing?
My favorite thing is just being outside in warm weather. No offense to the people back in Minnesota, but it's just beautiful sitting on the beach. Just relax.
Yep. Yourself. Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, obviously the food, the heat, the water, I could go on for days. We don't have time to list all of my favorites, but just being here in the sand, the waves crashing, and the smell of the salt water. And wait, Brandon, we can't keep this up any longer.
Got to come clean. It's time to come clean.
As much as I want to be on location doing this podcast live on the beach in Hawaii, I am in Minnesota. You are in Minnesota. Cut the wave music. Cut the birds.
All right.
It's reality here. Neither of us are in Hawaii, but our guest today actually is in Hawaii. Aloha, Dean Snelling. Welcome to today's show. Thank you for taking the time to join us.
How's it, guys? I really appreciate you guys inviting me on here.
Yeah, it's an honor to have you. What does your view look like today?
Well, today it doesn't look... as you just described, it's actually pretty rainy and overcast today. So it's not as warm as we would like it, but it's probably a lot warmer than where you guys are at right now.
I would put a lot of money on that. Did the upland birds survive your winter okay this year? Did they make it through?
Yeah, I think they made it through just fine. They might have to endure a little bit of rain, but nothing like the birds up where you guys are at.
Right.
Well, I should take that back, because it does... where they live on Big Island, it does catch a little bit of snow. And we had about 2 good-sized snow on the mountain this year. So they did catch a little bit of snow for sure.
Are you serious? You guys got snow?
Oh, yeah. I'm dead serious. I've hunted maybe 300 meters from snow some years. Not this year, but some years. Yeah, we get there in the morning. There's frost on the ground. It's about 30, maybe 39 in the morning at the coldest. And it warms up to about 50 in a few hours.
Wow. So yeah. The first time I ever went quail hunting in Arizona, I show up and a snowstorm follows me. I'm pretty sure that if I came down to Hawaii, somehow I would end up hunting in snow. I just feel like that's the Minnesota hunter that just brings that snow down there with me. But I'm actually really surprised to hear you say that. I figured you'd be hunting in tank tops.
That's funny you say that. So we'll probably talk about it a little bit later. But my dad is originally from Indiana. And when my mom brought him over to visit Hawaii to see if they could live out here, he said, once I found out I could hunt in a tank top, I was sold. So you can hunt in a tank top. But in the mornings, it's it all depends where you're hunting. We have very rapid elevation change. So depending on how high you go and what birds you're trying to target, you could get into much colder weather. It's always been a dream of ours to like get a chucker in the snow, but we've never done that yet.
Oh my goodness. So are you a native to Hawaii then, or are you a transplant?
That's a great question. So, there's, I guess, two terms used to describe people from Hawaii. There's a term local and then the term Hawaiian, right? And so Hawaiian would be your the actual ethnicity of the people that originally, colonized these islands, right? The Polynesians mm-hmm. that came here. I personally am not. I am a local. My family has been here for 5 generations on my mother's side. So I'm half Japanese, half white. My dad came from Indiana, as I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. My Japanese side of the family originally came 4 generations ago to work on the plantation, but became cowboys instead. So my grandpa was a rancher.
Wow. So were you born on the island then?
Yes, I was.
Okay. So this for everything you know, your life has been the Hawaiian life. Which island do you live on?
I live on the Big Island, on a very more, I guess, a more remote part of the Big Island, on the north side called Kohala. It was actually the birthplace of the King of Hawaii. So he was born in that town. So we have a very historic town.
Gotcha. So you mentioned that your dad found out that he could hunt in a tank top and that was all he needed. But is hunting something that you grew up with your whole life? And is it a popular pastime down there?
That's a great question. For me, yes. My dad, as I mentioned, he grew up in Indiana. His dad, my grandfather, was a corn farmer. So he had a lot of land to play around on. So he did a lot of trapping and small game hunting. And then he brought that passion to Hawaii with him. There was probably a lot of unfamiliar things for him when he first got to Hawaii, but that was something familiar, right? So mm-hmm. he kind of jumped into that right away. It was easy for him to make friends through that. And then when I came along, as soon as I could get my hunting license, he brought me into the Hunter's Ed class. And I remember that same season, I shot my first bird, which was a chucker. And I've been kind of hooked ever since.
Wow. So locals are people that have moved to the island, right?
Locals are, it's a kind of an encapsulating term. It captures, the people, the Hawaiian people here, but there's mm-hmm. a lot of mixed race within Hawaii. So the plantation culture brought in Japanese, Filipino, Portuguese, Puerto Rican, Chinese, and then the Hawaiian people also used to work on it. And those races all mix. And so most people are a combination of 5 or 6 different ethnicities. And that's what we call local. If their family came here multiple generations ago, they're considered locals here.
Okay. So the locals, the residents of Hawaii, is hunting something that is commonplace for residents there?
Yeah, I would say outdoor recreation is very commonplace. I would say that bird hunting is not high on the list.
Okay.
I think it's more popular amongst the older generations in the islands. I think that's because Big Island really is the mecca of bird hunting in Hawaii. It's the only place where I would say the hunting is pretty productive in terms of birds. And so I think that kind of filtered the other islands out. The most popular type of hunting in Hawaii is going to be pig hunting with dogs, for sure. And
what
it's
kind
very
of hunting?
Popular. Pig hunting. There's a lot of wild pigs.
Oh, okay, yeah. Gotcha. Do so your dogs ever get into it with them?
Yeah, unfortunately, I have a young, new short hair. And the first season, he didn't have much interest. And then the second season, which was this season, he kind of got his first taste of blood with a young pig. And if the pig is smaller than him, he's tempted to chase it. I've tried to trash break him. It's been getting better, but yeah, it can be a little bit of a challenge for sure. There's so many of them, some places we go.
I just feel like it's such a, just the idea of hunting in the volcanoes and the rainforest and, just in mm-hmm. where you're at. Like, there's so many questions that I have, but, let's just start here. So you've been hunting for how many years now?
Well, I got my hunting license in, I would say, 4th grade. So I'm 29 now, so well over 20 years. I definitely got more serious throughout college and after college. My dad was the one taking me when I was younger, which I really appreciate him doing that. But I started becoming more independent, I guess, and hunting a lot more when I got a little older in my early 20s.
What is it about upland birds that keeps you coming back out there?
Number one has to be the dog, and I think almost every upland hunter would say that. I don't have any interest in going if I'm not taking my dog with me. But number two would be my friends and my family, because my dad ended up helping get a lot of my friends into it. So it went from hunting with my dad, just me and him, to hunting with about, I would say, 5 or 6 guys every weekend up in the mountains. And you can't really beat that with, you know, your best friends, your best buddies, and your dog by your side. There's nothing really, you know, much better than that.
Amen to that. I hear you. So I did a little bit of research on Hawaii's Department of Natural Resources website, and they lay out the information actually pretty well to understand which birds are available, mm-hmm. which islands you can hunt them. But the mm-hmm. resident hunting license costs $10, it looks like, and a non-resident costs $95. Am I accurate there?
Yeah, I don't know about the non-resident, but the resident, yes, for sure. The hunting is not very, it's not managed the same as it is in the States. I think that's for several different reasons, but I think the number one reason is that all species here that we hunt are introduced. Mm-hmm. So I think that changes the ball game a little bit, because I know it's we don't have like a bunch of drawings and, you know, things like that, even for the big game, because we have a lot of wild sheep and goats here as well that we hunt a lot. So it's not managed the same as the States. Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, so different. You have, as best I can understand, you have 12 species of upland birds and then 3 species of doves to hunt on the islands. And there's hunting allowed on 6 of your islands. So mm-hmm. I'm going to list these off. You tell me if I missed anything. But yeah. Here are the species of birds, the upland birds that you get to hunt. Ringneck cool. pheasant, green pheasant, and then can you help me here? Is it Kalij pheasant, okay.
Yep.
Gray Franklin, Black Franklin, Urkel's Franklin, Chukar partridge, California quail, Gamble's quail, Japanese quail, chestnut-bellied sand grouse, mm-hmm. and then a wild turkey. The 3 species of doves are mourning dove, spotted dove, barred dove. Did I miss anything there?
From my knowledge, there was Hungarian partridge introduced at one time. I'm not 100% sure on the accuracy of that statement. That's okay. just a possibility. The Gamble's quail was always on the checkout list when I was younger. It's recently been removed. There hasn't been too many accounts of them being harvested, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're still around in small numbers. It's just that I don't think the hunters here in Hawaii would really pay attention to the differentiation between them and our California Valley quail. Kind of similar looks, right? And we're not really exposed to them as much as in the States. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's some lingering around, but yeah, they're gotcha. Not really accounted for anymore.
Okay. So of those species, which is the most prominent or plentiful bird on the island?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's kind of a tricky question to answer.
Sure.
So I'll try and tackle it the best I can. But I would say, let me name a few first. Urkel's Franklin, Gray Franklin, Kalij pheasant, Gray Franklin, and ringneck would definitely, I'm not counting the doves. Because mm-hmm. People don't really get into that too much here. And then also the turkeys, those are the most prominent of all of them. Now, if you're talking the public hunting areas where people get to access, that's not private land, mm-hmm. I would definitely say the Urkel's Franklin takes the cake.
Really?
It is okay. by far the most abundant bird. If you go out on a weekend, you can go out on Saturday, Sunday. There's a very good chance you would limit on that bird both days. That's the limit's 3 of them a day.
And on public land, you can do that on public land.
Yeah, I would be confident that you would at least get 2 every day. Most likely 3 if you stick it out. Some days I contact 20 of them.
Okay.
It all depends. If we're talking most abundant, just overall in the islands, I would say it has to be the Gray Franklin. Now, the reason why they're not maybe as abundant as the Urkel Franklin in the public hunting area is the Gray Franklin likes the habitat around the coastal areas of the island. And many of the coastal areas around the island are either private land, resorts, and or too hot to really hunt with your dog. And the terrain's just not really hospitable for bird hunting. You could probably get an hour in the morning. But there's a lot of Kiabe trees, which are very thorny in those areas. So it'd be hard on the dog. A lot of it's private land, and it also gets scorching hot with high humidity pretty quickly. So it's just not very conducive to hunt a dog, but there is thousands and thousands of Gray Franklins. They're even in my front yard all the time. There's a lot of them.
Does it drive your dog crazy to see him?
When he was a puppy, it was interesting to watch him just be in the yard and then picking up the scent from where they walked. But where I live now, I live a little higher elevation. So now I get the turkeys and the kleej in my yard. And yes, that does drive him crazy for sure.
So
I have some interesting pictures of him like getting all excited in his kennel while the turkey's like wandering outside in the yard.
Oh, I couldn't imagine. My dog would go insane. Wouldn't be able to take it. So do you have access to both public and private land when you hunt?
Yeah, my dad actually reaped the benefits more than I did. When he first moved to Hawaii, my grandfather recently passed away, but he was 98. So he was a little younger when my dad first got here, and he had, I would say, upwards of 500 acres of leased land that he would run cattle on, and it was great bird hunting. So my dad got to enjoy all those private access. For me now, I have a few areas that I can access privately. I live on 15 acres, and we have ringnecks in our back pasture all the time. So my dog will find those. Like I mentioned, we have turkeys, and we have a lot of kleej. So I can wake up in the morning and see 8 kleej in my front yard. It's not a common, is a pretty common sight.
What is the difference between the three species of pheasants? Can you describe it? Like here in the Midwest or in America, you know, the pheasant range here in the lower 48, I'd call it, you know, they're a sporting bird. They're wild birds that run. I mean, they are a very tough bird. I assume they're the same down there, right? I mean, they'll challenge you and your dog. And are the green and the kleej, are they the same?
So I believe the word green pheasant is kind of, I think it's a misrepresentation of what it is. It's just a melanistic pheasant. And the melanistic pheasant has, you know, hybridized with the regular ringneck and created some weird combinations. But that, I believe you guys just call it melanistic pheasant, if I'm correct. And so we have a bunch of those running around, and I would say 90% of all of our ringnecks running around are completely wild. There is a local ranch that runs like a bird club, which is very expensive, and you can hunt their ranch land. And they release ringnecks and chukar into their pastures every year. So those are our only released birds now, is the ones that they release, and it's not too many. So most of them are completely wild. The kleej pheasants are all completely wild. I would rank them as the third most abundant bird because they can inhabit a very wide elevation band as well. They're down from like 1500 elevation at my house, and I've seen them up to like 10,000 elevation on the mountain. So they're everywhere. And they act like it's weird. They almost act like a chicken, a wild chicken in a way. They like to run and they like to be up in trees. But if your dog catches them in heavy cover, they'll hold for you pretty well.
Gotcha. Do they flush in with multiple birds in a covey, or are they singles?
Yeah. So I did some research on them a few years ago, just out of curiosity, and they're originally pair birds. They like to be in pairs, but someone did a study on them at the local university here in Hawaii, and they noticed that these birds were participating in a new behavior since being brought to Hawaii, and it's called cooperative breeding. And I've witnessed this myself. So what you see is a couple cock pheasants with more hens around them, like maybe 2 cock pheasants and 6 hens, and they'll be in a bunch. And I see this every morning in my yard, and I guess they've kind of changed their reproductive strategy since being here in Hawaii, because many times you'll run into 4 or 5 or 6 of them at a time.
When you're hunting, do you see them when you see them together?
Yeah, I've seen about 8 of them while I was hunting in a small area, in a tree, some in the tree, some on the ground. I would say 8's the most I've run into while hunting.
So as a bird hunter, you have a free day to go do whatever you want, to hunt for anything you want to. What do you go for?
That's a terrific question. One of my buddies just loves chasing chuckers, but that's the most brutal because we have to go up to about 8,000 to 9,000 and walk straight up the volcanic slopes to find them. I enjoy doing that once in a while, but I would say not all the time. I would say going after Urquels is my favorite, just because they're very crafty birds. They also cooperate with your dog pretty well, but at the same time, they can be, like I said, crafty and kind of keep you on your toes, and you just will have a lot of contact with them. And they're found in a pretty large elevation band as well, about 6,000 to 12,000 elevation, and that's pretty much the public land we're hunting, is about that elevation band. So yeah, they're just fun birds. They're not as quick flying as the other birds, so they're a little easier to shoot, but then they kind of do, they're smart, so it keeps you on your toes and it's fun. So I would say I would go after Urquels Franklins for sure.
When they flush, Do they flush like a pheasant?
No, not at all. They stay lower, and they don't fly as high as a pheasant. They stay much lower. I would say they're faster initially off the ground, but pheasants seem to pick up a more speed when they get off the ground. But Urquels are much faster on the initial flush, but they're and close in size. They're close.
I was gonna
in size.
Say what? Yeah, because they're bigger than a quail, right?
Oh, they're much bigger. They're the size of a cock. I've seen a cock Urquel be very close to a big one, to a size of a ringneck pheasant. They're a little smaller, but they're close in size. Yeah, the hens are smaller though.
I was gonna ask, so you know, the cockbird versus the hen, you know, here when we're flushing pheasants, it's very easy to distinguish the difference. Now when you're hunting some of those other species, you know, I've been researching upland birds in Hawaii for a couple of years, you know, hoping someday to get down there and film a TV show. But one thing that's always made me nervous is I don't want to shoot a bird that I'm not legally allowed to take, you know? And so I don't know, you know, when you're out there, do you have any clue what's going to flush when your dog goes on point?
Yeah. I mean, I think for a person that is coming to Hawaii initially, you might not be able to kind of like guess which bird would be in that area, but we've been hunting it quite a while, and so we kind of know there's probably like usually like two or three birds that maybe is what the dog is on point. The good thing is you can shoot hens of any species except ringnecks, so you don't have to worry about that, and you guys obviously can tell a hen ringneck, so that's the only one. I will say though, the ringnecks area here in Hawaii will surprise you of where they are found. Like, I sometimes am still surprised. I'll be like up in maybe like 9,000-ish elevation, 8,000, and in kind of rocky terrain, and a ringneck will fly off a point, and I'll be like, whoa, I didn't expect that. So it can catch me off guard sometimes too.
I believe it. I mean, in the different habitats that I've hunted, I'm always surprised when in the middle of a forest, I see a pheasant walk by, their majority are in the grass and, you know, the different kinds of native grasses, but just their ability to adapt to some of the terrain. So, you've got quite a few Franklin, is your population of these birds, you're saying that the Urquels, the gray Franklin, you know, and the ringneck pheasant are the most populated on the islands. Mm-hmm. And are they on every island?
I can't give you a super accurate description of that because I'm not too aware. I just know that they're not nearly in abundant numbers as Big Island. I know the other islands have grays, blacks, and Urquels and pheasants. But I can't tell you like which one of which on which island, but the quail and stuff they were introduced to all the islands, but the birds in general have really done the best on the Big Island for sure.
What causes that, do you think?
I think habitat. And I also think, the elevation change helps a lot too. And it provides these like niches for the birds, because if you look at the black, the gray, and the Urquels Franklin, it's very clear. Like the gray Franklins have, use the coastal habitat as their area. As you move up, you move into Black Franklin habitat, and then if you move up from Black Franklin, you'll hit Urquel habitat. It's like very distinct bands. I don't think the other islands have enough habitat to support these birds, because you got to think our habitat zones are very small. We're on an island, right? So even though we're changing elevations, that type of habitat is very limited because of our island size. So I don't think the other islands have enough habitat.
Gotcha. If you had to you know, to describe it to somebody, well, to me, if to describe what it looks like, what your vegetation looks like. Yeah. I'm guessing it's not blue stem grass, is it?
Mm-hmm. No. So it's a lot of it's just fountain grass. It's this fire resistant grass introduced from Africa, I believe. A lot of it is that there's multiple other types of introduced grasses. We have native plants as well. If I can give you like a broad description of what to kind of, I guess, relate it to, I had a friend from the States come and hunt over here, and he was like, man, this does not look like what I thought Hawaii looked like. This looks like a combination of Florida, Arizona, Texas, and California all in one. Like, you would be surprised. There's a lot of like, a lot of it looks like Arizona, Nevada-ish in some areas, but then you drive 20 minutes this way and you start getting in more lush green areas. So it's very hard to kind of explain to people that haven't seen it, because it's not your palm trees and sand beaches. That's actually a very small portion of the island.
So like that rainforest kind of feel isn't really what you're hunting. It's more of the beaches that tourists see. But when you're out there hunting, you're in completely different kind of habitat.
Yeah, I would say it's way closer to like Arizona, Texas-ish dry forest type of habitat. Some of it does get a little greener. The only bird that lives in the thick rainforest of Hawaii are the caledge pheasant, and we don't chase them in those areas because it's just too thick for the dogs and for us. It's just really, really dense. And really? They're the only birds that will go in there. Yeah.
Have you ever shot one?
Yeah, I've shot a lot of caledge, but they're the only ones that would venture into the rainforest, but they're also found in the drier areas as well.
Oh, okay.
They're very versatile birds, yeah.
Gotcha. So let's move to the quail species. So you've got California quail, gambles, which no longer are, you know, really hunted, and then Japanese quail. Which of those, well, we know gambles, the numbers are way down, but the California and Japanese quail, which of those do you think are the most abundant?
California quail, for sure. They're very interesting. And, you know, I'm just giving a very observational account for what I see, not no research or scientific based. It's just what I see. But I hunt a lot off season for other big game, like mouflon sheep and things like that. So I'm in the same areas that I hunt birds, but I'm hunting sheep. And so I get a different, like, I get a different account of what's happening off season. And off season, I see a lot of quail. I see relatively big coveys of maybe 15 to 20 California quail, and I see them on the road frequently. And then season comes, and as soon as season hits, the birds seem to break off from their coveys into very small groups, and they seem to be found a lot deeper into the public hunting area. So we hit them like when we're walking pretty far in, and they flush very early. They rarely hold for your dog. They're very challenging to shoot, but they are there in pretty large numbers. I've seen some coveys on the road of like 40 to 50, and then season comes and I'm like, where did they all go? So I'm not sure what's going on with them. We've shot, I would say me and my friends might've shot 4 or 5 this season. We've seen much more, but I did talk to a lot of old timers, and I heard there used to be a lot more of them as well. And they've kind of declined a little bit.
So for somebody that has never seen a Japanese quail, I'm looking at one right now on my computer, and I would say it kind of looks like a female or a hen bobwhite quail.
Browns, that's a good description.
Browns, not a lot of colors there. When you find them though, are you getting covey flushes on those birds, or do they run?
They like to run. We call them butterballs here. There's not too many of them anymore. I honestly didn't even see one this season. My friend shot one. They're a Cochinex quail. And I was really confused about Japanese quail myself, because there's that, you know, that semi-domestic Cochinex quail that people raise for eggs and things like that. That's actually the same quail. Cochinex japonica, I think it's called. And it's the same exact quail, but that Cochinex quail has been bred and I guess like kind of domesticated. And so there's different variations of it, but the original Cochinex quail is that Japanese quail that we call butterball here. But they're not too common anymore, to be honest. We'd be surprised if we get one a season between me and my friends.
Yeah, that's a bummer. Dang it.
Yeah, Yeah, it's so kind of a bummer. Yeah, for sure.
You know, we're losing, you know, in the States here, our bird populations are constantly going up and down based on habitat, right? And we lose a lot of habitat here based on, you know, what landowners are doing to the land, if they're taking grass out and putting it into row crops. What do you have on the islands that would cause the habitat to change, or that would cause the bird numbers to drop, like you're saying?
Mm-hmm. I'm not an expert in this, so I don't want to give inaccurate information, but these are some things that I've heard, and these mm-hmm. are some of the things that I think might be happening. But again, I'm relatively young, so I don't know if my accounts are completely accurate. I just wanted to put that out there. But
sure.
So first, I think this is one thing I hear a lot. And the one thing I hear a lot is that the Urquhart's Franklin is becoming very prominent. I mean, I think it's growing in population every year. And so one of the thoughts is that this Urquhart's Franklin, which lives in the higher band of elevation, it's not really contacting the gray and the black Franklin, but it's contacting the California quail, Caliche pheasant possibly, and the chucker. But I think the chucker and the Cali quail are the ones that would be most affected if this is true, because the Caliche pheasant can, you know, be in other areas as well. It's more versatile. It can go in lower elevation. But chucker and Cali quail are strictly in the same elevation bands as the Urquhart's Franklin. And because Urquhart's Franklin has increased so much in population, it is thought that maybe they're pushing out the California quail and the chucker, because those populations have dropped a bit. The only reason why I don't know if this is completely true is many times while we are hunting, we will see Urquhart's Franklin and Cali quail, or Urquhart's Franklin and chucker, right next to each other hanging out. So I don't know. That's just an observation. I don't know if mm-hmm. what's going on there, but it is a reasonable thought. Maybe it's affecting the amount of resources. The second thought is we used to have a lot of wild sheep on the public areas of the mountain. There was an effort to eradicate them due to their suppression of native plants, right? They were eating native plants. So the state hires helicopters 3 times a year to go and shoot all these mouflon sheep and remove them from the public areas of the mountain, which is controversial in itself amongst hunters. What that has led to is grass, that fountain grass that I was speaking of, growing back because the sheep is no longer there to suppress it. The Urquhart's Franklin thrives in thick, thick cover. We will find them, and they're very hard to flush sometimes. You can be stepping right on them and they won't flush, and they're just covered in really mat and thick grass. Chucker and California quail, I don't think they do as well in those situations. And so it could be that. It's that the habitat is leaning more now in favor of the Urquhart's, and that's why they're doing so well. And the California quail and the chucker are losing habitat due to the encroaching grass. So gotcha. Again, this is just observational. I don't know if it's true, but those are some thoughts that are being put out there. I think those are the major concerns. Drought is a third one. We have some dry times, and that's known to be affecting the birds during their breeding season. So I'm not sure, but I would say those are the main issues for sure.
Gotcha. So it's almost like you're describing, if this is the case, that some of the habitat is growing too well, which I assume probably is a good thing for the ringneck pheasant or the other pheasant species as well, right?
Yeah, the pheasants, I haven't heard too many complaints about their populations as much as like the Cali quail and the chucker. I would say the ringnecks have stayed relatively steady. They like the open pasture lands here in Big Island. And the unfortunate part is a lot of those are private areas. So we don't always get to hunt the areas where the ringnecks are going to be, because there's just no public land available for us in those areas. But I think they're doing okay, the ringnecks. Yeah.
Gotcha. So I did, you know, a little bit of research on it. In 1962, the mm-hmm. first ringneck pheasant was brought out to a private ranch on the island, and obviously mm-hmm. their population expanded beyond the invisible mm-hmm. borders, and now mm-hmm. they're on all of the islands. Mm-hmm. The rest of the species of birds, are there any native species to your islands?
there's native birds, but not upland birds or game birds. So no, yep. These okay. are all introduced. And one interesting thing that I learned too, was that chukar was one of the first, and they were introduced in, I think, the 1920s. And then after their successful introduction, the birds rose up to around 30,000 birds. It was estimated in around, I think, 1955-ish. And then because of that success, they introduced the Franklins next.
Hmm.
Yeah. Gotcha. But then the chukars have recently kind of dipped in population.
So you don't hear a lot about people going to Hawaii to hunt for birds. Is it, I just have maybe not come across somebody that's done it. I mean, is it mm-hmm. popular? Do you see people from the States or other countries that, you know, book hunts down there on the islands?
Yeah, once in a while. I think there's several barriers that are hard for people to get past. And I think one is just the unknown, right? They're not really sure what to expect and if it's worth it. Mm-hmm. The second is bringing a dog over is not easy. We have rabies free here in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. So getting a dog if you're a resident and getting a dog over here if you're just trying to visit and hunt here is a challenge. There's a lot of paperwork to go through. So I think that's a big hurdle to cross. A lot of people that come here to hunt as visitors will book a hunt with that ranch that I was talking about. And you can book a day hunt with them. It's relatively expensive, but they have a guide with dogs and you'll hunt areas that are pretty abundant in birds. Other than that, on the public areas, I really have never run into a public land hunter from out of state in my time. I don't think I have at all. If they're not accompanying with a local, you know?
Right, right. Well, I would think, it is intimidating. You don't know what you're going to experience. Like you said, all of those challenges just to get there. But in order to take somebody out on a hunt, let's say a tourist has got a family at the beach and says, hey, I'm going to go on a hunt. I'm just going to find one of these ranches. Are there a lot of options or are they pretty limited?
Are you talking the private or the public?
Private.
Private. It's pretty limited. It's just, this big ranch called Parker Ranch.
Okay.
And actually, my grandfather was a cowboy for them for a while. So I wish I was around during that time, because if you're an employee, you can get the hunt over there for free. And that would have been wonderful. But
gotcha. So you like to get out on the public lands, though, then? I mean,
we're hunting pretty strictly public. Yeah.
When you go, is it a small area? Are we talking massive amounts of public land? I mean, percentage wise of the islands, how much of it is open to the public?
I never really thought of it like that. From being an island, you know, a person that's lived on an island, Big Island's relatively big. The public land available to bird hunt, in my mind, is relatively large. I mean, to drive around the mountain that we hunt would take you roughly 4 hours. And that's just driving around it, right? That's not stopping to hunt and things like that. It's a big area. We're talking like thousands and thousands of acres.
I'm looking at my Onyx app right now, and I turned on the layers so that I can see the island. I'm looking at the Big Island right now, and there's a lot of green. There's a lot of land that's, I'm just going to click on one here. It says Hawaii government lands, 63,962 acres. I just dropped, on one of these pieces. Is that land that you can go hunt?
Did it say GMA?
Let's see.
If you see the Mauna Kea, there's like a Mauna Kea mountain on there. That's one. Mm-hmm. That's where we hunt the most, but you can hunt other areas too. There's 60,000 acres is probably less than there's more than that available. There's a lot of land available.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just clicked on one of the parcels and, this says game management unit, right? So I assume that's land that you can hunt.
That is.
Public, if I bought a non-resident license and I was able to go through all the process of bringing my own shotguns and bird dogs down there, I could walk right out there and go hunt.
Yeah, you could. Yep, for sure. Absolutely. And you would not be able to get through all the areas while you're here. I can go hunting on the weekend with my buddies and not even see another hunter, for sure. Not saying that always happens, but that can happen.
If you had to take a guess, how many hunting licenses by residents are sold each year?
Let's see. I can say, how about this? That'd be kind of hard for me to answer. I wouldn't really know, but if we're talking bird hunting on opening weekend, if I were to look at the check-in sheet, I would say that sometimes that opening weekend, the most there is like 150 people. And then after that, during the middle of the season, towards the end of the season, sometimes there's only like 20 people a day that are going on those thousands of acres.
Wow. So you're rarely running into another hunter when you're out there.
At the beginning of the season, yeah, everyone's kind of like a little bit more excited. So they're going, but there's not a lot of diehards. So by the end of the season, me and my buddies will not see some of the units we go, we won't see another person up there while we're there.
I suppose when that winter weather sets in, people just don't want to get cold, right?
Yeah, they just hunker down.
What does a normal day look like for you when you're out there? I mean, are you going to see how many species of birds and how many birds do you flush and how many do you typically bag? What's an average day? What's a poor day? What's a great day?
Okay, I'll give you a little like a synopsis of the day. So usually we live kind of far from the area. So we usually wake up around, I would say maybe 3:30, 4 o'clock. We all meet up at one of our houses and then we pack up the dogs and we drive usually anywhere from an hour and a half to 3 hours. The best areas that we go to are probably about 3 hours away. It's a lot of off-roading, so it takes a while to get there. We usually hunt, maybe we do about two walks usually. So we usually get done hunting around maybe 2 o'clock and then we head home and we get home around five. During that time, I think, like I was mentioning, we all go in with the expectation that we will at least get, you know, two Urquhart Franklin a day. That's a relatively reasonable expectation. Some days we feel like we get a little bit burnt out on the Urquhart, so we try to target, you know, a different species. So we know areas where we can consistently see college pheasant. We know areas where there's a higher chance we'll see chucker. So we'll go after those. And then we also know areas where we can find black Franklins. They're a little bit trickier. They're a hard bird to first shoot and also pin down. They like to run. And so they're a little bit harder. The other bird that we haven't talked about yet that is very probably reliable to get is a turkey. We can hunt turkeys using dogs, which people just lose their mind over sometimes because it's like, how the heck can you do that? And we can shoot one a day. Huh. So we shoot. To put in perspective, I shot seven turkeys this season over my dog.
What is that? Does your dog point them or what? How does that happen?
Yeah. So now I can, like I was mentioning, my dog's pretty young, so I'm still kind of like getting his, learning his behavior a little bit, but now I can almost absolutely tell when it's a turkey. And so what happens is a lot of times I'll catch him on a point and when I finally get up to him, he kind of ranges far. So say I'm 200 yards away and I finally get up to him on point, he'll be very nonchalant and he'll release his point and then he'll start walking as I get up to him. And it's almost like he's following something. And it's always that a turkey is like slowly creeping away from him. And the turkey won't usually hold for me to like actually step on to flush. They'll get a little antsy and they'll fly. So it's kind of like a soft point and then a following my dog and then the turkey will fly. And then we shoot him out of the air.
Dang.
Yeah. Turkey hunters don't really probably like that, but that's how we do it.
Right. It's not your typical. here in the States, you know, spring turkey season is just getting started or will be getting started here for a lot of states. And, you know, it's totally different because we're out there early. We find their roost. Yeah. You know, we know where they go out and strut and we're calling to them and they're gobbling back. And there's that excitement there. My dog has found turkeys before. I suppose I probably could have taken a shot at him, but you know, it's just such a tough bird to bring down that I wouldn't want to shoot at him unless it was, I had a good shot at the head. But the turkeys that you have, are you able to take a Tom, Jake, or a hen?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think our turkeys might be most of their genetics, they're Rio Grandes. But there's been introduced turkeys from Mexico. There's been Merrimans I don't know how to say it because we don't really call them there.
Miriams,
and Eastern turkeys. Yeah. And they've all been introduced, but the Rio Grandes from Texas that were introduced really took hold. But the genetics are very mixed because they hybridize supposedly. So they're not as big as your guys' turkeys over there. And to be honest with you, most turkeys that we shoot out of the air, they go down and if they don't go down immediately, the dog ends up picking them up and bringing them back to, us. But the weird thing about the management in Hawaii, like I was saying, is you can shoot one a day during regular upland bird season. Hen, Jake, doesn't matter, one a day. Then following upland season, we enter spring turkey season here, which is, I believe, now or coming up really soon. And you have to buy a tag and you only can shoot one tom. So it makes zero sense to me. I know for people that are from the States, like, what the heck is going on there? It just makes no sense. I don't understand the theory behind it, but we have so many turkeys on our island. They're everywhere.
Wow. So yeah. They're more of a nuisance bird than they are kind of something that people really enjoy having around.
I wouldn't say they've been categorized as a nuisance, but they're just like very prominent, and you'd be surprised. I've seen them up at like 11,000 feet. They're hardy birds, man. They're tough. They're everywhere. You can't not find a turkey. Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, so a lot of people listening to this may not have realized the upland bird hunting opportunities that exist in Hawaii. They probably don't know that back in, I want to say 2016, Pheasants Forever launched their first chapter on the Big Island of Hawaii. Do you know, are you a part of that chapter, or do you know anybody that's involved with it? Is it still going? Is it doing well?
Yeah, so I'm part of a lot of Facebook groups for bird hunting, and I remember posting some pictures, and this guy from Pheasants Forever reached out to me, and I kind of told him that I'm a school teacher at a local high school. I like to bird hunt, and I'm in the process of building a very large flight pen to raise either ringnecks or chukar to help, you know, release back into the wild to help recover the populations, and it works well with my school curriculum. I teach like a lot of natural resources, and I try to do hunter's ed at the school. So it kind of ties everything together if we're able to raise some birds and actually release them to help hunter recruitment here in Hawaii. And that conversation kind of fell through. So I know you work with them, so maybe you could help maybe connect me to some resources, because our flight pen is about, I would say it's about 80% completed. We have everything. We have a huge brooder. Our flight pen's around 100 feet by 50 feet. So we're kind of ready. We're looking at next year for ordering a batch of chicks.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, here in the States, you know, the general opinion from Pheasants Forever is that releasing birds onto property is not the best way to create a population long-term. Habitat is what brings the birds in. And I can speak to that as well, because I've hunted on properties across the country that never had a single bird planted in its existence. And there are thousands of birds on the properties. All they did was they created the habitat, and the birds eventually found it. And then they had the ability to nest, to winter, to survive, all of that stuff. They had the food, there's everything they needed to, and it became a paradise for these birds. So that's kind of the results that work best here. I can't speak to what would work best for you guys, because your habitat seems like it's almost, I mean, other than, you know, you're talking about droughts in certain parts of the islands, maybe different altitudes, but, you know, with the Franklin thriving because the habitat is so thick, I guess I would assume that the birds would do well in those situations. But I certainly can connect you with people at Pheasants Forever. I'm sure that they'd be interested in learning more about what you know and working together. I mean, when people care about a resource, it only benefits everybody. So that's a great thing. You mentioned something about, you know, getting, you know, this set up through school. So how do you specifically work with kids or people in school to introduce hunting to them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So a lot of my kids love to pig hunt. That's probably the biggest pastime that they enjoy. I do have a few kids that are that bird hunt because their family does as well. And so my personal goal was to try and expose more kids to bird hunting so that they would get involved. And I thought by raising birds, and they also know it's my personal interest and they kind of get into it, but by raising birds, releasing them, that might spark a little interest to get them out to actually bird hunt too. And when I was younger, they didn't necessarily think more hunters was better for, you know, hunting in general, right? Because you want to have the areas to yourself, you want more birds to yourself, all those selfish reasons. But as I got older, I started to realize that, especially here in Hawaii, our land is very limited, right? And if we don't have people advocating to keep that land available to continue to be hunted and enjoyed, it could be an issue that we might lose those areas, especially because a lot of our land here in Hawaii often gets turned into conservation areas where we're not allowed to hunt, or habitat is changed that might be not conducive to birds. So conservation and hunting here in Hawaii don't mesh as well as they do in the States, right? Because the species are non-native. So I want to be able to get a lot of people advocating out here for these game birds so that we can continue to enjoy this, because it is a unique kind of tradition to Hawaii. A lot of old timers enjoy bird hunting. And so I want to make sure that doesn't get lost through the generations and more kids start to dip their toes in it. And I think by, you know, having them involved in the process of raising birds and potentially releasing them, that, you know, we can spark some interest there.
Gotcha. Well, yeah. I certainly appreciate the work that you're doing there. I would think, and I might be wrong here, but I would think that there's, you know, obviously the Parker Ranch that you mentioned is a place that tourists and hunters can go and experience hunting in Hawaii. But I would think that if it would be something easier to do, more people would do it and then realize that there's kind of an untapped potential there, maybe, for, you know, hunters from the States. Because, I mean, I just think of the opportunity to, one, just someday visit Hawaii, right? Mm-hmm. But then two, to follow a bird dog out there on the side of a volcano. I can't imagine a hunter that wouldn't want to experience that.
Yeah, for sure. And bagging birds that you pretty much, I mean, it would be a lot harder to bag one of these birds if in their native habitats, right? Like, you're talking the Franklins are out from Ethiopia, and some of them are from like the foothills of the Himalayas. So, I mean, it would be tough to get these birds in their original habitats. But the best part is they're still wild here, and so it's the next best thing. And it's a lot of fun not knowing when you go out there what birds you're going to encounter for the day, having that many to target. For sure.
Right, right. Have you ever hunted upland birds outside of Hawaii in the States?
No, I've only big game hunted. I've never hunted birds out of state. For me, it's just it's really weird. Like, if it, I'm not opposed to it, but I really enjoy my dog and going with him rather than, you know, just going and shooting some birds. And, you know, hunters always say that. I don't think people believe us outside of the sport, but it really is the dog that keeps you going back, for sure.
Right, right. Well, if somebody wanted to go on a bird hunt in Hawaii, how would you recommend that they make that a reality?
I would recommend that they contact me and make a deal and bring me over a bird dog, because it's so hard to get bird dogs here. Bring me over a bird dog. I'll put you up for 2 weeks and I'll take you hunting as much as you want.
Oh, you better be careful what you ask for there, my man.
No, all jokes aside, though.
can you take people out, because there's certain states that don't allow, you know, somebody to guide on public ground. Like, let's just say somebody's listening right now and says, hey, I want to call Dean up and say, can I hire you? Is that something that you can even do there?
I don't think you can hire me, and I wouldn't even ask to be hired. I would love to take someone out here. I joke about the dog, and I'm joking but not joking. It's just so difficult to get a breeder to work with me outside of Hawaii to do all the rabies requirements and send over a dog. So that's a tough part. But other than that, no, I would take people out here. It's fun. We have someone coming from Alaska that's going to do some big game hunting with us next month. But yeah, as far as like just taking someone hunting, for sure, I would love to take someone in, as long as I don't accept any monetary.
Right, you're just friends hunting.
You're just friends hunting, so it's no problem for sure. Yeah,
right.
I would love to do that.
I know you invited me a couple years ago, and I've always had that at the top of my bucket list of places to go, and I want to experience it someday. I want to be able to document it, you know, so that we can show people what it looks like to hunt upland birds on volcanoes in Hawaii. I just can't imagine it. I mean, it feels like I would just be in a postcard. Like, I'm just trying to envision it. It seems amazing. I appreciate you taking the time today to just to share what you know, your experiences down there. And I'm sure that people are, it's going to get their brains thinking a little bit, right? I mean, this is not South Dakota's pheasant fields. This is a completely different experience. Your hunting season for upland birds runs, is it November through the end of January? Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. November, we get 3 months of hunting over here. And then you can hunt, I think it's Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday.
Gotcha. So it's not 7 days a week. Interesting.
No, a lot of times after work, we'll head out.
Gotcha. Last question for you. What do you do in the off season? Do you go surfing?
No, I'm not a surfer. I hunt a lot. So I'm constantly, me and my other buddy, we love chasing sheep. So we're always looking for mouflon over here. And we do that. I have a lot of pigs in my backyard. I'm not a pig hunter, but I like to shoot them in my backyard when we need some food. I also enjoy fishing, shoreline fishing a lot. We have, you guys know them as GT or giant trevally. So we call them ulua over here. So I do that a lot with my buddies. But yeah, anything outdoors pretty much catches my interest. So that's pretty much what I'm doing.
Dean, it sounds like you're in paradise, my man.
Yeah, I can't complain. You're right.
Well, I appreciate you sharing your view of the islands of Hawaii. I hope someday to visit you. I hope somebody listening right now makes that a reality for themselves as well. Once again, thank you to Federal Premium Ammunition and Onyx for helping us to make this show possible. Be sure to download the Onyx Hunt app before your next hunting adventure to find out why it's one of the most valuable hunting tools available today. And I just proved that it'll show you where you can legally hunt in Hawaii. All of the episodes of the Flush Television Show from our latest season are now uploaded to our YouTube channel. Simply search The Flush TV on YouTube and you'll find all of our shows. And please subscribe to our channel so you don't miss any of the upcoming videos we plan to post. You can stream each episode in its entirety from home, your bird camp, or as my boss Scott Franzen likes to do while he's sitting at his desk at work. Thank you for joining us today. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank, reminding you to take the time to introduce someone new to the field.